Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Russell Blaylock, and we're going to be talking about cancer. And basically, I want you to know that I think most doctors are well-motivated, they're trying to do a good job, but unfortunately, most doctors are not allowed because to know what's really going on. Mainly the medical journals are controlled by the drug companies. The medical schools are controlled by the drug companies. Certainly there are people going around to visit the doctor on a regular basis. We call them detail men, and detail men and women come and bring free supplies for the doctors and tell them about the products. And there is an organized effort to suppress important information that you need to know for your health from the doctors. And as a result, why we have an awful lot of suffering, we have an awful lot of people who are ill unnecessarily. The drug companies are making $250 billion a year for pharmaceutical sales of a lot of medicines that really are not effective at all, and many of them do far more harm than good. But before you don't want to hear me talk, let's hear Dr. Russell Blaylock, a retired neurosurgeon who now does full-time in medical research. He publishes the Blaylock Wellness Report. If you don't take it, you should. I subscribe to it. I pay for a subscription. I wouldn't think of being without it. It comes out every month. Vitally important information you need to know for your health and the health of your family. Russell, thank you very much for coming on short notice. We had a problem this evening, and I do so much appreciate you being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Stan.
Well, why don't you just pick up the story about cancer and whatever else you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, basically what I'm doing, I'm in the process of writing a new paper on the new developments in cancer research. And what the public is not aware of, and unfortunately a lot of oncologists aren't aware as well, is that the whole paradigm of cancer causation and what makes it grow, what makes it spread, is changing. What we used to think was true, now we're finding out a lot of it was not true. And these are things that are interestingly giving a lot of weight to natural treatments of cancer. You know, there's always been this argument between the oncologist who wants to use the chemotherapeutic drugs and radiation to treat cancer, and the natural health people that promotes the use of certain natural supplements to treat cancer. Well, from these new findings, and this is a thing that's quite exciting in the field of cancer research, what we're discovering is the theory that any kind of cell in the body can become a cancer if certain conditions take place, and mainly mutation of particular genes. And that if a certain number of these genes are mutated, then a cell, any cell in the body can become a cancer, and that was the prevailing theory. Well, all of our treatment is based on that theory. The only problem with it is now we've discovered that perhaps this theory was wrong. And that the treatment that we've been doing for the last 50 to 60 years may have been down the wrong road, and is even a possibility could it be making certain cancers grow faster and be more invasive and the patient worse off. Now, like any change in medical education or medical understanding, these things are slow to enter clinical practice, so it's going to be a good 5-10 year transition before.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought.
While the storm clouds gather.
Russell, you go right ahead with what you're saying. It may be a 5 to 10 year transition before certainly the latest information catches up with the average doctor. Go right ahead.
Yeah, most of our treatments are at least 10 years behind what our research is showing us, and that's pretty well agreed upon in the medical literature. And the same holds true here. The whole paradigm of cancer is changing. Now, there's two major things that have changed. Number one, we found out that normal cells in the body cannot change into malignant cells. Even if you have all these mutations in the gene that we thought caused cells to become cancerous, they won't become cancerous tumors. And we've discovered that if you take a tumor, for instance, and you cut out some of those cells and you implant them in an animal that has no functional immune system, it won't grow a cancer. And then if you take other cells from that tumor and you implant them in that animal, it'll grow a very fast-growing tumor. And so they want to know, well, what's the difference between these cells? Why are some cells able to produce tumors and others can't? But what they discovered is that the cell that's actually causing the tumors is a stem cell. I hear a lot of talk about stem cell research and using embryonic stem cells, etc. Well, stem cells are cells that are primitive, that are scattered throughout your body, and they lay dormant. And their purpose is that if you're injured or have a disease that damages your normal cells, these stem cells can wake up and repair the damage. They produce cells that look like whatever type of cell was damaged. And that's the normal function of stem cells. It's a reparative thing. So you can even form organs from stem cells. You can take a stem cell and produce a kidney or a heart or lung. Or, you know, the stem cells have the ability to produce whole organs. Well, one of the things we notice is when you look at cancers, they look like organs. They're primitive, abnormal-looking organs. So it's appearance that a stem cell has tried to produce an organ, but something went wrong. Well, now we realize that sometimes these stem cells undergo this malignant change. They become so mutated in their genetics that they produce abnormal cells that are coming off from the stem cell. So the stem cell, a single stem cell, can produce...
Hold that thought, Russell. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russell is simply pointing out that I said in the past, it was always felt that certain normal cells could develop a genetic mutation and begin to become cancer cells, and certainly it was normal cells that certainly had these genetic mutations that led to cancer. But more recently, it's found that the cancers really don't come from normal cells that are mutated. They can mutate all they want to, but they're not going to become cancers. The cancer comes from stem cells. These are primitive cells that are in the body. They're there for repair, but basically if something happens and those stem cells change, why, this is where the cancers can come from. In other words, if you have altered stem cells, this is the origin of cancer rather than normal cells with altered genetic makeup. Please go right ahead, Dr. Russell.
Okay, when we look at these cancer stem cells, what we see is they're abnormal genetics in them, and they start producing cells that are more mature. In other words, they're maturing into normal organ cells, or trying to, but they're not. They're producing abnormal-looking organ cells. So if you take a typical tumor and you remove it, what you'll see is that 90 to 99% of the cells inside of that tumor are not really cancerous. Only about 1% to as much as maybe 5 or 10% of those cells are actually cancerous. So the vast majority of the tumor is not a cancer at all, only a very small percentage of it. Now, if you remove all of those cells that make up the bulk of the tumor that are not stem cells or cancer stem cells, and leave that 1% behind, within a short period of time, the tumor will grow back. Well, that's why tumors tend to reoccur. It's because that stem cell can fully form a new tumor fairly quickly, and it varies in time. Some are very aggressive, some are very slow recurrence. So this seems to be the prevailing theory now, is that cancer stem cells are the only cells that can produce cancer, and they make up only a very tiny portion of the whole tumor, and the rest of the tumor is not really made of malignant cells or cells that can form tumors if they should metastasize, for instance, or spread somewhere else in the body. Only when stem cells enter the blood and end up some other part of your body, like a lung or a bone or somewhere else, only then can they form tumors that we know as metastasis. Now, what we've discovered further is that the environment around that stem cell, that is, the fluid that's around the stem cell, what we call the microenvironment, makes a lot of difference in how that tumor behaves. What we found is that in almost all cases, there's inflammation in that fluid, that microenvironment. And it begins even before the stem cell becomes cancerous. So the various early changes we see that are eventually going to produce a cancer is inflammation around a stem cell. And that inflammation bombards that stem cell with free radicals, damages its DNA, and it becomes a very early cancer. It goes through a stage of a precancer, and then it becomes a cancer. Now, that inflammation continues in that fluid around that little tiny tumor that's forming. It's almost too small to even see. As the tumor grows and gets larger and larger, that inflammation still remains around the tumor and within the tumor. And then as the tumor begins to spread, the inflammation spreads with it. So we know that there's a very strong connection between inflammation and that every stage of the cancer's growth, from the earliest time, from when it's just a few cells, all the way to the time that it's a very large tumor invading the tissue and spreading around the body, inflammation's going on. And that the inflammation is what drives it to do that. So when tumors invade, the reason they invade is because of inflammation. You remove the inflammation, they don't invade. You remove the inflammation, they don't spread. So inflammation seems to be the key event that's going on inside of tumors and around tumors that makes them do what they do. And that if you remove that, they seem to take on more like a benign tumor, something that's not going to harm you and can be easily removed. So those two facts, one, the cancer stem cell is the driving force of the tumor, and that inflammation is what's causing the tumor to form in the first place, and it determines the nature of that cancer, whether it's a very benign type tumor or whether it's a very aggressive tumor, whether it's more likely to metastasize and spread, whether it's going to invade the surrounding tissues.
Now, Russell, one thing, is this universal for all cancers? What about lymphomas, leukemias, things like that? Would they fit into the same category?
Yeah, it's universal for all cancers, and they've looked at every type of cancer. In fact, the cancer stem cell was first identified in leukemias and lymphomas, and then they later discovered it in solid tumors. The first was breast cancer. And now they've identified it in a great number of cancers as these stem cells and this inflammatory driving force. So inflammation is the driving force. Now, it explains a lot of things. It explains this close connection between inflammatory diseases and cancer. For instance, we see that people who have chronic inflammatory diseases like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus have ulcerative colitis, regional enteritis, or inflammation in the colon. These people have a very high incidence of developing cancer in those inflamed areas. Certain types of infections, for instance, the HPV infection in the cervix of women produces chronic inflammation, and that's what produces the cancer, not the actual virus. Helicobacter pylori infection in the stomach is associated with carcinoma of the stomach and lymphoma of the stomach. which characteristically has this inflammation. If you remove the inflammation, then the Helicobacter pylori does not produce gastric cancer or lymphoma. We find that the tumors associated with lymphomas, for instance, if you remove the inflammation, they don't produce the lymphomas. So it appears that the inflammation is the central event. It's key. It has to be there in order for cancers to become cancers and to behave as cancers. Now, with this inflammation, of course, the next step is, well, what about if we use agents that block inflammation? Shouldn't that make tumors more benign and less likely to spread? Well, that's exactly what they found. They found if you give people with a high risk of developing colon cancers, aspirin or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medication over a long period of time, their incidence of cancer of the colon is far, far lower than the person that doesn't take it. The same is true for prostate cancers and breast cancers and brain cancers. So there's a lot of cancers now we know that if you use long-term aspirin or long-term anti-inflammatory medications, it cuts their risk of cancer dramatically. Now, the second question would be, well, what about if the cancers are already established? You know, I said that it also drives the tumor to become more aggressive and invasive and spread. What if you give the anti-inflammatories if you already have this cancer established? Well, they're finding it's the same effect. If you reduce the inflammation with these agents, you get far less chance of metastasis. You get much slower growth of the tumor, and it becomes more like a benign tumor than a malignant tumor. So it does change the character of the tumor. Well, this is a lot of information that's very useful because of two things. One, conventional treatment, that is chemotherapy and radiation, both of them increase inflammation and increase free radical generation. The very thing that's driving cancer to become more invasive more likely to metastasize. So it appears that our conventional treatments are actually something that is negative, that we probably wouldn't want to do. Now, you know, a lot of people's thought at this point is, well, my doctor said that if you take the chemotherapy, the tumor shrinks, and some of the tumors have dramatic shrinkage. And that's true. If we look at some of these chemotherapeutic agents that are being used, sometimes you'll see 90% shrinkage of the tumor. It almost goes away completely. But within a short period of time, within weeks, months, it comes back. And when it comes back, it's much more aggressive than it was when it first occurred. And that's because the only thing that the chemotherapy is killing is these non-cancer-causing cells in the tumor. That 90% that it's not really a cancer. So it kills those cells, and that makes up the bulk of the tumor, so it appears as if the tumor is disappearing.
Well, what does it do as far as the stem cells? Does it hit the stem cells?
Well, it has no effect, and it cannot kill the stem cells. And in fact, what it does, it makes the stem cells resistant to treatment. It induces the stem cell to become chemo-resistant and radiation-resistant. And, of course, that's the thing that makes cancer grow faster and become incurable, is that once it develops chemo resistance and radiation resistance, then no treatment seems to help. So that's the flaw in our present treatment. And this is mainly in solid tumors. Now, in lymphomas and leukemias, we are seeing people that appear to be cured or at least have very long-term survival with conventional chemotherapy and radiation therapy. And it may be that in that instance, the stem cell is either killed by it because it's different.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
While the storm clouds gather.
Okay, well, our guest is Dr. Russell Blaylock, and Russell was just saying that it seems that it's somewhat different as far as lymphoma and leukemia is concerned, because in these, it may well be that the stem cells are actually killed. Is there any evidence that taking chemotherapy, if you have lymphoma or leukemia, will actually kill the stem cell, the primary cell responsible?
Well, it appears so, because we have such high rates of cure in those two malignancies. You know, when you and I started out in medicine, if a child developed leukemia, it's 100% mortality. Now, at least 60% are having very long-term survival. With lymphomas, quite a few lymphomas are now curable with chemotherapy. So this is, one of the few successes with chemotherapy and radiation is the lymphomas and the leukemias, what we call hemopoietic-type cancers. The other possibility is that these treatments are causing the stem cell to revert back to a normal stem cell. That's always a possibility as well, which is best of all worlds. So you have to kind of put hematologic malignancies in a different classification than solid tumors like breast cancers or prostate cancers, because they can be cured by the chemotherapy and radiation treatment. But the question is now, among the radiation therapists and the chemotherapist researchers, is that if inflammation is the driving force, what if we do something that will block the inflammation but still allow the chemotherapy to block the cells being reproduced? And that's what a lot of chemotherapy does. It prevents cell reproduction. Some experimental results seem to indicate that combined treatment is highly successful, much more than just using chemotherapy alone. Now, the agents that seem to do that with the most regularity are what we call the flavonoids. And these are chemicals found in plants, commonly eaten plants, spices. There's about 5,000 or 6,000 flavonoids that's been identified so far. And quite a few of them have very, very powerful cancer-inhibiting ability. Things like curcumin and resveratrol and apigenin, valkyline, hesperidin, ellagic acid, luteolin, and the sulfoforanes are top of the list. They're very, very powerful at inhibiting cancer. And there's been enormous amount of research with these different natural products to see how and why they inhibit cancer growth. And what they found out is that these agents are very powerful anti-inflammatories, they're antioxidants, and they affect the what we call cell signaling. That's how the cell communicates inside to make it do all the things that it do. The cell signaling tells the cell whether to grow faster or to divide or to produce blood vessels so the tumor can grow. It gives the cell all these instructions. Well, the natural products like curcumin, for instance, and quercetin, they inhibit all of the processes that the cancer cell needs to grow and invade and metastasize and produce blood vessels.
Okay, hold that thought for just a minute. We'll be right back in a moment. Now, Dr. Russell is talking about something I think is vitally important, and he says that certainly they found out with cancer, if you can cut down on the inflammation, why you can certainly decrease the intensity of the response and help in the treatment of this disease under the division of the cells. And probably the most important new finding is the fact that the flavonoids, there are lots of them in our diet, they come in our fruits and vegetables. Now, these products certainly can have a direct effect on decreasing the growth of cancer. And he's talking about curcumin, quercetin, resveratrol, and down a long list of these various flavonoid products. And it's important that you know which ones they are, because they can really have a profound impact. And they've been found to have a profound impact on the growth of malignancies. Go right ahead, Russell.
Yes, it's quite impressive, and there's just literally hundreds of articles written on the experiments and studies they've done on these various chemical compounds. And what they do is they take human tumors and they implant these tumors in animals that have no immune system. Now, an animal that doesn't have immune system, if you take a human cancer and you implant it in there, it'll spread all over the cancer, all over the animal, and kill it very quickly. So it's a good way to test different agents to see if they inhibit cancer. And what they found is that these things like curcumin, quercetin, and ellagic acid profoundly inhibit the growth of these tumors and particularly prevent the invasion and spread of the tumors. In fact, some of the animals have been able to block the spread completely. And it's because it's blocking these inflammatory cell signaling pathways inside of the cell that drive the cancer to do what it does. Angiogenesis is one of the areas that the pharmaceutical company has been looking at for quite some time. And what that is, when a tumor starts growing, it grows so fast it outgrows its blood supply. And if it doesn't increase its blood supply, it'll die and disappear. So the idea was to block the chemicals that have to do with producing these new blood vessels, what we call angiogenesis. The pharmaceutical attempt to do that has not been very successful. But natural products like curcumin and quercetin and ellagic acid and lutein and apigenin and all these things have been found to be very potent at inhibiting angiogenesis, in addition to all these other things they do, like they inhibit cell reproduction. They block the cell division, but only of cancer cells. They prevent the cancer cell from secreting the chemicals it needs to migrate, to be invasive, to grow rapidly, and do all of these things that are necessary for it to be a true malignant tumor. So the next step was, well, what if we combine these flavonoids with traditional treatment? Now, the chemotherapists from the old school, before we learned all these things, their first response was, well, you can't do that because our cancer chemotherapy depends on producing high levels of free radicals that kill the cancer cells, and these things are antioxidants, these natural products, and they'll interfere with that and make the cancer grow faster. Well, when you look at the actual studies, which this has been done hundreds and hundreds of times, we find just the opposite. In fact, these powerful flavonoids and some of the vitamins, like the true natural vitamin E and vitamin C, actually make the chemotherapy much more effective. So if you combine, for instance, curcumin with traditional chemotherapy for lymphoma, we find that actually it makes the chemotherapy much more deadly to the cancer. But interestingly, at the same time, that curcumin protects the normal cell from being damaged by the chemotherapy. Because, you know, one of the experts in chemotherapy research has said it's a misnomer to say that these are anti-cancer drugs, because they're not. They're anti-proliferative drugs, which means they stop cells or inhibit cells from dividing. But they can't tell the difference between a cancer cell and your normal cell. Now, some tissues in your body have to reproduce all the time, like bone marrow cells, blood cells, cells in your GI tract, in your liver. They have to reproduce very rapidly, and they do so all the time. So the chemotherapy damages the liver, damages the GI tract, and it can suppress your bone marrow for that reason. And that's very harmful to the patient. But these flavonoids protect those tissues so that they're not harmed by the chemotherapy, while at the same time making the cancer a lot more sensitive to the killing effect of the chemotherapy and to radiation.
And so basically it protects the normal cells and actually potentiates the killing action on the cancer cells. That is amazing. I mean, you would think that this would be widely used today to do everything they could to help our cancer patients. But it's not. We'll be back in a moment.
Clouds gather. Far across the sea. Let us swear
right ahead.
Yeah, you would think that they would go ahead and do it, but the problem we have, Stan, is that the people who are involved in clinical medicine are extremely and, I think, overly cautious. They don't want to accept a new treatment until it's undergone rigorous ad infinitum research and clinical trial. Well, the problem with that is cancer patients can't wait. They can't wait 10 years, 20 years for all these little meticulous details to be worked out. The interesting thing about the natural extracts is that they're essentially non-toxic. Curcumin, there's no known toxic concentration of curcumin or quercetin. They give it in huge doses and have no toxicity. So they're extremely safe, and that's how they're different from chemotherapy as well. The safety margin is very, very, very high. The patients do not get sick. In fact, they feel better. In fact, I have a relation of mine who has lymphoma, and she's in her 80s, and she was going through the chemotherapy, and she just got to the point she couldn't take it. She said, I can't do this anymore. I'd rather die. And so I talked to her son, and I said, well, let's do this. So she said, I'll do it. So she did it, and she says, now she says, I feel great. She was bedridden before, and she said, I feel great. I get up, I go out and get my paper, and I sit up at the table and eat breakfast. I feel fine.
Oh, no, is basically she taking the quercetin, the curcumin? What is she taking?
Well, she's taking a combination of several things, like the curcumin, the quercetin, she's taking the silymarin. So she's taking a combination of things. Now, the advantage there is that each one of these flavonoid extracts attacks the cancer in a slightly different way. So if you combine them, you get this synergistic killing that's far, far greater than if you just give one of them. But even a single one, for instance, one of the most resistant and aggressive cancers we know of is pancreatic cancer. It just doesn't seem to respond to anything. So they
hold that. Hold that thought, Russell. We'll be back in just a moment with all of our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Russell is simply saying that most cancers will not respond well. You have something like a pancreatic cancer, and basically they just don't respond to chemotherapy, radiation. But go ahead. What was your thought on that?
Well, they had a patient that was in, you know, the terminal stage of pancreatic cancer, and so they said, well, they're not responding to any medications, and so they said, why don't we try the curcumin and see what it does? And so they gave this patient large doses of curcumin, just as a capsule, powder in a capsule. And to their surprise, the tumors in the pancreas shrunk over 90%. But some of the tumors seemed to be more resistant. The patient was so far gone that they did die. But they were astounded that this curcumin worked better than any of the chemotherapy combinations they had ever tried. And what they realized is that curcumin is hard to absorb, and that the amount of curcumin that actually was getting to the tumor was small. But even in that small concentration, it had this profound effect on the cancer. So now they're doing research on improving the absorption of curcumin by different methods, and so they've gotten the levels up much higher, and at least in the experimental studies, they're seeing a dramatic effect of orally given curcumin when they use these high absorption forms. The same thing as quercetin. Quercetin is very difficult to absorb, but you can mix it with olive oil, for instance, and you dramatically increase the absorption. You can mix it with other things like bromelain, so you can take it in a capsule, and you can get very high absorption. And when they're doing this, they're seeing some dramatic results. And I've been involved with some leukemia patients, for instance. A little girl that was about 5 or 6 years old, and her mother asked me, about these things, and I told her that the research was showing that quercetin and curcumin dramatically improved leukemia treatment. That is, it made the chemotherapy more effective, And it would protect her brain and other organs while she was getting the chemotherapy, so her mother did it. And this little girl, this is about 10 or 15 years ago, she's just doing excellent. She's now a teenager. She's a cheerleader. She's very active and bright and top of her class in school. And one of the things of chemotherapy is it damages the brain. And it took them a while to realize that chemotherapy does penetrate the brain and can cause learning difficulties and memory problems, particularly in these children that are being treated for leukemia. But the beauty of the curcumin and quercetin is it protects the brain against the damaging effect of the chemotherapy. So, you know, this is a very major advance in the treatment of cancer. Now, what are the pharmaceutical companies doing with this? Well, the pharmaceutical companies are funding a huge amount of research on curcumin and quercetin because they realize that the secret to cancer cure and cancer control is going to be the flavonoid. So they're spending money trying to figure out how to alter the molecule just a little bit so that they can patent it and then charge this exorbitant price so that they can not lose the money that they'll be losing on traditional chemotherapy by selling curcumin. So now they'll have a curcumin that costs 100 times what you could buy it in, you know, from a health product store. So that's what the pharmaceutical companies, they're onto this. They realize it. They know these things are very powerful answers to cancer, and they're spending a lot of money researching it. And many of these papers are actually funded by the pharmaceutical companies because they want to be able to patent this process. The other thing that people need to understand about cancer is that it's now agreed that about at least 90% of cancers are due to environmental things that can be controlled. Pesticides, herbicides for lymphoma, leukemia is top of the list. Chronic infections with an impaired immune system in that group. Diet is a very big part of that group. When we look at diet, that's particularly interesting because when we look at diet and look at all the things we know dietary that promote cancer development, promote cancer growth, invasion, and metastasis, there are things in the diet that increase inflammation. Well, what sort of thing in the diet increases inflammation? Well, there's three major things. One is the omega-6 oil. That's things like safflower oil, sunflower oil, peanut oil, canola oil. These oils are pro-inflammatory. They increase the body's inflammation. Sugar. When you consume large amounts of sugar, your body becomes inflamed. And it produces a chronic smoldering inflammation that drives cancer. And sugar is a number one fuel for cancer cells. And the third thing is glutamate. Now, glutamate is an amino acid. It's found in a lot of foods. It's an additive for processed foods. They put it in a lot of processed foods. And glutamate is being found to be a major driving force for inflammation and for the growth and spread of cancer. And that's one of the other things we're finding. If you use glutamate blockers, things that block the glutamate receptor on cancer cells, they grow much slower, and they have difficulty invading and metastasizing. So glutamate is a big player in the cancer process as well because it's intimately linked to inflammation. Now, one of the things that the cancer stem cells do is they take over the body's immune system, and they cause the immune system to switch to a type of process that hides the cancer, so the immune system can't see it. I call it cloaking of the cancer. So it's like it's invisible, and the immune system can't see it. Also, the immune cells are switched to a pro-tumor growth type immune cell. For instance, we know that certain type of immune cells can actually stimulate cancer to grow faster. And and that the tumor itself causes your immune system to switch to that type of immune cell. Now, changing the diet can and some of these flavonoids have been shown to switch the immune system back to a tumor-killing type immune cell. Your macrophages, which is a primary type of white blood cell, is a very powerful tumor-killing cell. And so when you switch it back to that tumor killer form, it can kill enormous amounts of tumor, including stem cells. So reestablishing the immune system so that it can do its job and kill the cancer is very important. There's also a thing called immune surveillance. And what this does is that once you say if you've gotten rid of 99% of the cancer in your body, what the immune system normally does is it goes through your body, it finds these cells that are lying dormant, and it makes them stay dormant. And it does that job very well if it's healthy and working the way it's supposed to. Stem cells can remain, cancer stem cells can remain dormant for as long as a decade or more. Some people think a lifetime. And as long as it's dormant, it's not going to cause any problem. If things happen to you, for instance, if you become inflamed for some reason, it'll wake up that dormant cell and then it'll start producing a cancer again. So that's why you see patients, for instance, who had a breast cancer and it was treated and they appear to be cured and for 10 years they're doing very well, and then the cancer comes back and it comes back very aggressively. And you say, well, how could it have hidden for 10 years? Well, it's because that cancer stem cell, can remain dormant and asleep for 10 years. And then if the person becomes inflamed, say they're eating a bad diet with a lot of omega-6 fats and a lot of glutamate in it, it'll wake up that immune cell, and then it starts producing tumor cells.
Well, Russell, where do you get glutamates? Where do they come from? What part of the diet?
Well, it's naturally found in high content in red meat. That's probably the number one source you'll get in just the food itself. Certain things like tomatoes, cheeses, milk, particularly dried milk or condensed milk, soy products, they're very high in glutamate concentration. So you want to eliminate those from your diet. Mushrooms are very high in glutamate, so you want to eliminate mushrooms from your diet.
What about eggs? Do eggs play a part in this at all?
No, eggs don't really have much of whey glutamate in them. So eggs are not a problem. In fact, it's a good source of protein to keep you from losing muscle protein. Now, one of the things that people see or that you most people are aware of is that when people get cancer, they seem to lose a lot of weight, and particularly they lose muscle. We call this cancer cachexia. It's always been a mystery until the last 10, 15 years, and we've discovered that, in fact, the cachexia is caused by inflammatory chemicals, particularly one of the inflammatory chemicals called tumor necrosis factor alpha. And this TNF-alpha is what is causing the muscles to start shrinking and the person to lose all this weight. And when they block this inflammatory response, people start gaining back their muscle and they start gaining back their strength, even if the cancer is not controlled. So we're beginning to answer a lot of the mysteries and puzzles and observations that we've had about cancer that we never knew before.
Well, now, how do we block this tumor necrosis factor?
Well, there's a drug they use for rheumatoid arthritis. Tumor necrosis factor alpha plays a big role in rheumatoid arthritis. The levels in the blood get very, very high, so they invented this drug that dramatically blocked tumor necrosis factor alpha. But in cancer treatment in humans, and they have tried this in some human cases of cancer, and it did work partially, But the problem is there are other cytokines similar to tumor necrosis factor alpha that are also important. So you need to reduce all of them. Now, that's the beauty of the flavonoids. Again, many of the flavonoids, like resveratrol and grapeseed extract, curcumin, quercetin, potently inhibit these inflammatory cytokines, these things that cause muscle wasting, that cause tumor growth. One of the powerful tumor signals for growth is a cytokine called interleukin-6. In fact, things like prostate cancer are very dependent on it for growth, and cancer of the stomach is very dependent on it, breast cancer. If you block interleukin-6, the tumor starts growing extremely slow and will not metastasize or invade. So using these flavonoids, that's another way they inhibit the growth and spread of cancers, is that they block this interleukin-6 as well as the other inflammatory cytokines. So the effectiveness and the ways in which these flavonoids are inhibiting cancer is so numerous. I mean, just about everything that cancer needs in order to survive and grow is interfered by these agents. Other things help as well, other than flavonoids, like the fish oils, the DHA in fish oil, has been found to inhibit cancer growth of many types of cancer, and that includes lymphomas and leukemia. Silymarin is a very impressive plant extract from milk thistle, and silymarin is being found to be a very, very potent cancer inhibitor. And the advantage of silymarin is it also protects the liver. That was one of the things it was first used for. People who have hepatitis, for instance, silymarin can help protect the liver from damage by hepatitis, or alcoholic livers, or any kind of liver damage is improved by silymarin. And it's a dramatic improvement, dramatic protection of the liver. When people undergo chemotherapy, one of the problems that what they see is damage to the liver, because liver cells reproduce rapidly. And silymarin can protect that liver. Now, the liver is needed for detoxification. And when you're being treated for cancer and the cancer cells are dying, they release all of their toxic components into the blood, so you need detoxification, particularly at that point. And so by using silymarin and curcumin, these other things that improve detoxification, then you're getting an additional benefit. You're getting detoxification that you need during that chemotherapy or radiation treatment. And some patients get so sick from the fact so many cancer cells are dying that they have to stop the treatment because they get deathly ill from it. And a lot of that is because the chemotherapy damages their detoxification system in their liver. So this way you protect the liver so that doesn't happen. It's just amazing. The more you get into this, the more you realize just how powerful these things are. Now, to get back to one of our prime things, that old cancer stem cell, we said it's almost totally resistant to chemotherapy and radiation therapy. So what can we do about the cancer stem cell, since it's the driving force? Well, what they're discovering is a number of the flavonoids and curcumin, quercetin, ellagic acid, and the baucaline is top of the list, is being found to kill cancer stem cells and inhibit the growth of cancer stem cells. And one of the really powerful things for killing cancer stem cells was the sulforaphanes, which is a compound found in things like Brussels sprouts and broccoli. When you consume a lot of these, this powerfully inhibits the growth of cancer stem cells. So in combination, when you're doing all of these things, you know, if you want to control your cancer stem cells, you eat a lot of Brussels sprouts and broccoli, particularly if you liquefy it by blenderizing it, and you add all of the flavonoid extracts on top of it, you're powerfully killing that cancer stem cell and controlling it.
And so basically then you're advocating that people use rather larger amounts of raw broccoli and Brussels sprouts?
Right, right. And if you blenderize them, you get a much higher concentration of these chemicals than if you just try to eat them, because it's hard to release it from the plant just eating it. But blenderizing it releases these powerful chemicals. And they're non-toxic. You know, they're not toxic at all. In fact, they improve the health of the normal cell. Again, it protects normal cells and kills cancer cells. Even by itself, without the chemotherapy.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment.
While the storm clouds gather across the sea.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest has been Dr. Russell Blaylock. It's been a fascinating hour. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes to wrap up the program, Russell. What are the thoughts you want to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, basically what I do is I research deep into the literature of things that are being done now and being done in the last 10 years. That way I can give this information to the public so they don't have to wait 10 years to get this vital information. The things I've discussed tonight are non-toxic things. They don't cause harm. So we're not dealing with a drug or something that has to be carefully tested for toxicity. It's just not only is it benign, but it protects the body against damage by traditional treatments. So this is something the public can use now. They can change their diet. They need to change their diet. And unfortunately, oncologists and even some of the bigger cancer centers are not telling patients to avoid these cancer-promoting foods and things that make their cancers more aggressive. They're not telling them that. In fact, they're giving them the exact opposite advice. They're telling them to eat cakes and pies and bread, and the main thing is just not lose weight. I've even had oncologists tell patients not to eat any vegetables because it might interfere with their treatment, which is appalling. Because this research is in these journals that the oncologist should be reading. You know, I get all this information from cancer research journals, the major journals throughout the world. So these things are safe. They can be done now. There's no reason to have to wait till they get through with all this meticulous hand-wringing before they actually implement it. And that's my main message to the public.
Well, basically, is there any place then in the lymphomas and leukemias for the use of chemotherapy, do you think?
Yeah, there's still a place for that, but I think it should be combined with these extracts. It makes the treatment safer, and it makes them infinitely more successful. I've seen that in a number of patients. And I talked to one time I had a conversation with the head of oncology at UCLA, and he told me, I've been treating cancer for 30 years with nutrition. I've never seen it interfere with the chemotherapy and radiation therapy. It only benefits it. It doesn't hurt it. So that's from a top authority in oncology with 30 years experience.
What about, is there any place for radiation? Would people be better to steer clear of radiation?
Well, the radiation they do
hold,
now.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was simply asking, Russell says that certainly in lymphomas and leukemias there is a place for the nutrition. It really seems to help, and the chemotherapy seems to help as well, but only if you have proper nutrition. Then I asked about radiation, if there's any place for radiation in the treatment of these things, and you were saying something about the radiation they use now. Please pick that thought up.
Yeah, the radiation that they do now is much more highly localized. There's less scatter radiation. So if you're going to actually treat a tumor itself, it's a lot safer than it used to be. If you combine curcumin, for instance, with it, what we found about curcumin, it radiosensitizes the tumor. Now, what that means, it makes the tumor a lot more sensitive to being killed by the radiation. But at the same time, it protects the cells around the cancer, that is the normal cells, from being damaged by the radiation. So again, you have this specialized effect where it makes cancer more sensitive and it protects normal cells surrounding it. Now, even for diagnostic x-rays or post-op radiation, for instance, they do with breast cancer, you should have curcumin or quercetin or both in your system to protect your normal cells from being damaged by the radiation and making the cancer more sensitive to being killed by the radiation. So, there's a place for it.
Well, Russell, this has been a fascinating time. I know you're traveling next week. Have a safe trip. Look forward to talking to you when you get back. And thank you very much for sharing this with our listeners out across America. I hope that they'll get a copy of this tape and listen to it a number of times. God bless, and let me know when the report is completed. Certainly we'll want to point people towards it. Will you put this into your newsletter?
Well, this is going to be in a major journal.
Okay, now, would you like...
It's a highly technical article.
Would you like to tell our listeners quickly how they can get your newsletter?
Well, they can go to my son's site, and I don't have the name of it before me right now.
We call it the Blaylock Wellness Report. Go up on the Internet. The Blaylock Wellness Report. Would that be a good place that you think they can get off of Google?
Yeah, well, my son's site is, I think, www.blaylockhealthchannel.com.
Blaylockhealthchannel.com, okay.
Right. And I have some podcasts on there that I do regularly every week about different subjects that they can listen to as well. They're free. They can do that as well.
God bless. Thanks very much, Russell.
God bless you, Sam.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, Dr. Blaylock is a close personal friend, and I've known Russell for 30 years. And he's a unique individual. You need to get this talk that you heard tonight. And of course, you can get it through my ministry in a CD form. Suddenly, I would be remiss if I didn't mention it will be up posted on my webpage. You can pull it down off the webpage if you want to. But get the information and get it out. And basically, if you do have any sort of a tumor, remember that the important part, the flavonoids are playing. And basically, you need to have the flavonoid supplements so that you can go ahead and if you're going to take chemotherapy, why this will protect the normal cells from the devastating effects of the chemotherapy. And basically, of course, Russell is certainly a very reliable individual. He's a retired neurosurgeon, and the information he has is valid. We have a 4-CD set that he put out. On health purposes, we have a DVD put out called the Vaccines and Brain Development. Vaccines and Brain Development is very important. So if you call us at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for Russell Blaylock, Vaccines and Brain Development, and then ask for the 4-CD set of the talks that the Russell Blaylock has given, and then if you'd like to get a copy of this CD for tonight, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you're in a position to help Radio Liberty, we really need your help to maintain our network of stations out across America. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. So please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.